This episode of Shameless is brought to you by KX Pilates, reformer Pilates workouts to challenge everybody. Hey guys, just a heads up before we jump into this episode will detail themes around anti-Semitism and may be triggering for some listeners. As far as scandals go, there aren't many bigger than Harry and Meghan's dramatic estrangement from the British royal family. So how did we get here? And who was really at fault for one of the great family fracturings of our time? Welcome to Scandal from Shameless Podcast, the stories of the biggest celebrity controversies revisited.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Michelle Andrews. Part one of three.
I'm actually kind of shocked we haven't done this one yet.
Well, sometimes you need a bit of time.
Yeah.
You need a bit of time and space. It's been about 4.5 years. Can you believe that?
I feel so old.
Since Harry and Meghan stepped down as senior royals. Senior working royals was the technical term at the time.
Yeah.
And a lot has happened since. And we thought, is there a better time than now to actually go back through with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight and have a look at what happened?
This is one of those scandals where I literally remember where I was when I read the news. I was on holiday with Mitch in Byron. And I remember waking up, looking at my phone and being like, what?
I was also on holiday. I was in Shoal Bay New South Wales. Yeah. And I was just with Ollie. And I realized he cared, but not nearly as much as I needed him to.
The boys never care as much as we need them to. This was like early Jan.
It was. Yeah. Shall we just jump into it? I don't think need to explain why we're doing this. I think it speaks for itself. Let's roll all the way back because we are going to go back to about 1984 when Harry was born.
All right, Zara. So before we get to Harry, we need to say that for this series, we are citing three major sources. There's Spare, Prince Harry's 2023 autobiography. There's The Palace Papers by Tina Brown and Finding Freedom by Omid Scobie and Caroline Durand. A lot of the resources about the royal family feel heavily biased on either side. We have pulled as many resources and articles and general research we can to try and get the most objective truth, but we need to say that from the outset. Everyone has an angle, and honestly, those angles are sometimes tricky to trust.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I do feel like I read the Palace Papers, as our audience might know, because I recommended it in my own time. I read Spare as well because I was interested.
And I read Spare, yeah.
And I think it is really interesting to note that it's very, very hard to get a source as big as a book to be completely objective. Even someone like Tina Brown, who was the editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair and The New Yorker, you can see that there are biases there for sure. So it is really interesting noting that from the top. Our first episode is going to focus, of course, on Prince Harry because Harry had his fair share of scandals in the decades before he met Meghan Markle. And I think it would be very fair to argue that a lot of these scandals and a lot of the stuff that he went through in his early years led to his decision to leave the royal family.
Yeah. To tell this mammoth story from the very beginning, we are starting on September 15, 1984. That's when Prince Henry Charles Albert David of Wales was born to his parents, Diana, the Princess of Wales, and the then Prince Charles. Obviously, his by birth name is Henry. His by life name is Harry.
Love
so
that.
We'll call him Harry.
Yeah, we're going by life today. Now, we're not going to spend too much time on Prince Harry's childhood. We feel like it's been done in lots of detail elsewhere. And we have a lot to pack into these three episodes. But we will touch on the important stuff. Before his parents separated in 1992, Harry and Will, of course, his older brother, spent most of their time at Kensington Palace in London and at Highgrove House in Gloucestershire. It's pretty well known that Princess Diana tried to make Harry and William's life as normal as possible. And I've still got that in inverted commas because even her version of normal is not mine. But she did take them to school herself. She shopped for all their clothes herself. In a 1988 profile for Time, the author spoke to another mother who stood in line with Diana, Harry, and William to sit on Santa's lap at a London department store.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy this tidbit. That mother told Time magazine it was obvious Diana wanted her sons to be treated like other children. Prince Harry, it goes without saying, loved his mum more than anything. In Spare, his adoration for Diana was so abundantly clear. Take this as an example from the prologue. Her devastating smile, her vulnerable eyes, her childlike love of movies and music and clothes and sweets and us. Oh, how she loved my brother and me. Obsessively, she once confessed to an interviewer, well, mummy, vice versa.
Yeah, as part of her effort to make sure that Harry and William didn't grow up too spoiled as young princes, Diana also took her boys to AIDS clinics and homeless shelters to undertake charity work. Now, though Diana and Charles weren't officially divorced until 1996, they announced their separation in 1992 when Harry was just 8. That was obviously one scandal in and of itself, and one we're not going to get into the weeds of today.
Maybe another time.
Maybe another day.
Instead, we are zooming in on August 1997. That's when a 12-year-old Harry and 15-year-old William were holidaying with their father and their grandparents at Balmoral Castle in Scotland. Diana, their mum, was in Paris, and she wasn't alone. As per Spare, I understood that she was with her new friend. That was the word everyone used. Not boyfriend, not lover, friend. As long as mummy's happy, I told Willie, who said he felt the same.
In the middle of the night on August 31, 1997, Prince Harry woke suddenly to find his dad standing at the end of his bed in a nightgown. Now, in his own awkward way, he told his younger son that his mother had died in a car crash. Here's what Prince Harry remembers. What I do remember with startling clarity is that I didn't cry. Not one tear. Pa didn't hug me. He wasn't great at showing emotions under normal circumstances. How could he be expected to show them in such a crisis? But his hand did fall once more on my knee and said, "It is going to be okay." So very untrue.
When I listened to the audiobook of this memoir, that passage really stood out to me.
I don't think you can forget a tidbit like this when a child is told that his mother died and his dad didn't hug him.
Yeah. At Diana's funeral, her brother, Charles Spencer, condemned the tabloid media who hounded Diana so relentlessly when she was alive. Charles said, "My sister was the most hunted person of the modern age. She would want us today to pledge ourselves to protecting her beloved boys, William and Harry, from a similar fate. We will not allow them to suffer the anguish that used to regularly drive her to tearful despair."
Yeah, Charles Spencer said it straight then, and he said it straight ever since.
Such a famous moment as well.
Of course. I mean, to take that moment to say something so powerful was incredible. Mm. His eulogy echoed a really common sentiment at the time amidst the shock of Diana's death under such horrific circumstances. The general public were making it pretty known that they didn't endorse the kind of dangerous and stalkerish behaviour of the paparazzi. And what's interesting here is, according to Time, a Gallup poll taken in 1997 found that 43% of the UK public held the photographers chasing Diana that night in Paris extremely responsible for the fatal crash.
One good thing that happened after Diana's death was an amendment to the editor's code of practice, which increased protections of children's privacy. The amendment was directly put in place by the Press Complaints Commission to try and protect William and Harry from the press for as long as possible. Essentially, I mean, in layman's terms, it really meant that when Will and Harry were at school, there were now extremely strict rules that governed what the media could capture and publish about them.
Yes. So outlets basically had to be able to justify their reasoning for writing any story about or taking candid pictures of Harry and William. Like, they needed to be able to prove that whatever story they were working on was actually in the public interest. Mm. And obviously, schoolyard antics hardly qualify here.
Yeah. Not wanting to jeopardize their fragile relationship with the palace, let alone the public, media outlets and PAPS pretty much completely backed off from trying to capture anything about Harry or William at that time. As we know, that didn't last forever, but we're going to cover that in a second. First, we need to talk about the immediate aftermath of Diana's death.
Yes, because William and Harry still had responsibilities as young princes to fulfill. Days after their mother's death, the boys joined their father to greet thousands of mourners outside Kensington Palace. Here's how Harry wrote about this in Spare. I remember the mounds of flowers all around us. I remember feeling unspeakable sorrow and yet being unfailingly polite. I remember old lady saying, "Oh my, how polite, the poor boy." I remember muttering thanks over and over. Thank you for coming. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for camping out for several days. I remember consoling several folks who were overcome as if they knew Mummy, but also thinking, "You didn't though. You act as if you did, but you didn't know her."
Speaking of duties, William and Harry were required to walk for 20 minutes behind their mother's coffin through the streets of London on the way to her funeral service. This was controversial, particularly apparently amongst Diana's side of the family. According to Harry, the Spencers thought that that was barbaric to make William and Harry walk behind their mum's coffin.
Totally. Looking back on this experience in 2017, Harry said, "Genuinely, I don't have an opinion on whether it was right or wrong. I am glad I was part of it. Looking back on it now, I am very glad I was part of it."
What an interesting sentence, because he opens by saying, "I don't have an opinion," and then finishes by saying, "Actually, I'm really glad." So he does think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think the wording of right and wrong is really interesting, because it's like, well, yeah, at a theoretical level, is it right or wrong to put a young boy in that scenario? I can't answer that, but what I can say from my perspective is that I was glad I was there. It is a good example of the expectations that are placed on members of the royal family to show up and perform their duties, no matter how young or how old. But like, even two young boys that have just lost their mother, it's like that very British stiff upper lip as well.
Yeah, there was also speculation, and I want to make it clear, we're not sure if this is correct, but according to the podcast series You're Wrong About, there was speculation that the boys were made to walk alongside Charles because there was a belief that Charles would get booed if he walked behind the coffin. So he encouraged the boys to do it with him, as well as Diana's brother Charles. Almost like protection, that the public wouldn't boo that group of people. They would boo Charles, but by having his sons near him, the public had to keep mum about their, you know, discomfort.
Yeah, it's so interesting because obviously we don't know. But I can imagine there being a worry that the booing could happen.
I think he would have been booed. If it was just Charles, or if it was just the royals without the young boys there, like the senior royals, they would have been booed.
I think so, 100%. Now, shortly after the funeral, Charles whisked Harry off to Johannesburg for a highly publicised meeting with Nelson Mandela and the Spice Girls.
The Scandal Cinematic Universe is exploding.
We are colliding. For those who know, they know. This marked Harry's first trip to South Africa, and it was a place that remained close to his heart for the rest of his life. For a boy that was sort of desperately in need of a loving father, this trip sounded fabulous to a 13-year-old Harry, but Charles wasn't exactly like the fatherly type.
No, and Harry didn't hold back when he was writing about this in Spare.
Yes.
He said, "Pa had always given the air of being not quite ready for parenthood, the responsibilities, the patience, the time. Even he, though a proud man, would have admitted as much. But single parenthood, Pa was never made for that."
Since the separation from Diana, Charles had been seeing Camilla Parker Bowles, I mean, since the separation. I don't know. Who knows about that timeline? Both Harry and William were not particularly thrilled when Charles introduced Camilla to them. Sort of marked the beginning of a really savvy campaign, though, to bring Camilla into the royal fold. More than anything else, though, the boys wanted their father to be happy. So they gave Camilla and Charles their blessing. But I think if you've read Spare or you've read the Palace Papers, blessing, it was a soft blessing.
It was like a blessing light.
Yes.
It was a blessing to be like, okay, do it, but don't do it in front of our faces almost.
Yeah, and they also had one request, which was don't get married.
Yeah, as per Spare, a wedding would cause controversy. It would incite the press. It would make the whole country, the whole world talk about Mummy, compare Mummy and Camilla, and nobody wanted that, least of all Camilla. Remember, Harry was 13 at this point, so I can definitely understand why a teenage boy would have this take.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm 29. I probably could. I don't know if I was put in this scenario. As time went on and emotions began to settle, the press also began to relax their attitude towards the editor's code of conduct just a little bit at first. They sort of edged slowly.
Dipped a toe into the water.
Until they fell in completely.
Yeah.
For example, when Harry was 14, his classmates shaved his head, pretty standard.
Mm.
But somehow word got out that his head had been shaved. And soon after, the Daily Mirror, edited by none other than Piers Morgan at that time, ran a front page story with the headline, Harry the Skinhead.
They had no photographs, but that did not stop the Daily Mirror. They created some computer-generated images of what a 14-year-old bald Harry might look like. This was just over a year after Diana passed away and a year after the tabloids decided they were going to back off and leave the boys be. After the quote-unquote skinhead headline was published, Charles actually wrote a letter to the Press Complaints Commission, an action which prompted the Daily Mirror editor Piers Morgan to double down.
Surprise!
Here's what he said at the time. There are a number of areas of the prince's lives which should and do remain private and unreported, but I do not consider the reporting of a haircut to possibly be an invasion of privacy.
So interesting, because I agree, it's not really a severe invasion of privacy. But going back to what had been decided after Diana's death, is this in the public interest? Is this anything anyone needs to know?
Yeah, and also the framing of it. It's not like the headline was, Harry's bald, or Harry's got a shaved head. It was Harry the skinhead, which comes with layers of, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's dredged up by that kind of headline.
Yeah, shortly after this, the Daily Mirror was at it again, and this time they weren't happy. They weren't happy at all. Harry had broken a bone in his thumb playing rugby. In his own words, no big deal. Here's how the Daily Mirror reported this news. Harry's had an accident, but we're not allowed to tell you. The article read like this. In an extraordinary decision.
I love how you're going about this.
I know,
this.
I've got to add the
Go
drama.
Go for it.
The Palace Press Office insisted on a complete news blackout, claiming that because the incident took place in the grounds of Harry's school, Eton, it was not in the public interest and would invade the prince's privacy if published. While we, in capital letters, know what happened, we can't tell you. Others may defy this order, but we would prefer the palace to change their mind. To reassure you, we can say that Harry's injuries are not, in capital letters, serious. But the accident was considered grave enough for him to be taken to hospital. But we believe you are entitled to know if an heir to the throne is involved in any accident, however small, if it results in injury.
Shut up.
May I remind you, a bone in his thumb.
A broken thumb. Harry saw this particular article as the official end of the truce between the boys and the media that had followed Diana's death. As he wrote in Spare, apparently that agreement had now expired because there I was, splattered across the front page, made out to seem a delicate flower, or an arse, or both. Despite the somber subtext, something's wrong with Prince Harry, I marvelled at its tone, larky.
Unfortunately, these two articles, published in pretty quick succession just over a year after his mother's death, began to paint an image that would haunt Harry for the entirety of his late teens, almost into his early 30s. Harry was a larrikin, he was a daredevil, and he was most certainly the naughty one.
Mm.
We're going to get to more scandals around that after the break. Now you know I'm back. You may have seen Reformer Pilates is getting a lot of hype at the moment, whether it's your friends talking about going to their classes or seeing studio mirror selfies all over Instagram. It can feel like everyone's doing it, and sometimes you don't know where to start.
Yeah, trying out a new form of exercise can be daunting, which is why we're so excited to tell you about KX Pilates KX3 Challenge. If you want to start your Pilates journey and build healthy habits, this is for you.
Here's how it works. Once you've signed up, you need to complete 3 classes a week for 3 weeks. Then you'll receive a $30 KX credit, which you can use on your Pilates journey. Sounds like a win-win to me.
Having a free $30 credit in sight sounds like a good incentive to keep going. If you've been wanting to add Pilates to your routine, this is a great way to keep yourself accountable. Even better, if you complete the challenge, you automatically get a chance to win a year's worth of KX.
If you're someone who's more experienced in Reformer and also want in on the fun, worry not, as KX Pilates offers classes for all fitness levels, from beginner to advanced, and all classes will be available for you to attend as part of the challenge.
They have over 100 studios across Australia, so chances are there's one near you. Challenge yourself to build healthier habits today and purchase the KX3 pack at kxpilates.com or download the KX Pilates app.
Yeah, head online to kxpilates.com or download the KX Pilates app to start your Pilates journey today.
Thanks so much to KX Pilates for making this episode of Shameless possible.
Now you know I'm back.
All right, Zaz. So we're fast forwarding slightly to 2001. At this point, Harry is 17 years old and he was studying still at the deeply prestigious high school, Eton. Over the last little while, Harry had been experimenting with drugs and alcohol, but not in a way that's dissimilar to a lot of teenagers.
Yeah.
We don't know who it was, but someone leaked information about Harry's activities to the editor of the tabloid News of the World, a woman named Rebecca Brooks.
Yes. So using this tip-off as a jumping point, Rebecca and her team began to seriously investigate 17-year-old Harry and his friends. So the primary goal of this investigation was to uncover actual evidence that Harry was using hard drugs, namely cocaine. In spare, Harry was like pretty adamant that he wasn't using cocaine at this time of his life, but he did say he was smoking weed and he was drinking. The thing is, and what's really important here, News of the World couldn't find any evidence of Harry using cocaine at all, even after tailing his friends, interviewing the wait staff at venues he was known to frequent. They had nothing. And not just that, they didn't even have any evidence of him using drugs at all, Mish.
Yeah. The savvy, or you could say manipulative, Rebecca decided to approach the palace anyway to see what information she could squeeze out of them. She actually tricked palace aides into thinking she did have hard evidence of Harry's drug addiction, when the truth was she didn't have anything besides the original tip-off, which, you know, isn't enough to go off. As per the palace papers by Tina Brown, a PR deal was struck. If Prince Harry admitted that he'd smoked pot, the News of the World promised to leave out what is said were more serious allegations about hard drugs. This was a home run for Rebecca Brooks, as the hard drugs material was untrue and a bluff.
Yes. So for context, teenage Harry had actually told his father, Charles, at some point during his time at Eton that he had smoked weed before. So that meant the palace knew that he had, which meant that in the deal with News of the World, they were able to tell Rebecca Brooks that, yes, Harry had smoked pot. The worst thing, of course, here is the palace didn't realise that News of the World didn't have concrete proof of Harry's drug use, not even of marijuana. So despite their best efforts, they barely had anything at all besides the original tip-off. Yet the palace fell for the tabloid's ruse and ended up throwing 17-year-old Harry under the bus.
What does this say? So, like, the palace is clearly worried about the harder drugs stuff making into the media. They didn't trust Harry when he said, actually, I've never done that?
I completely, yes, agree with that. I don't think they trusted him, because I can't really understand how people who are meant to be savvy media people, but I guess what we've learned over the decades is maybe the palace's media people aren't that savvy.
The palace keeps hiring duds.
Yeah. Would fall for this.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I do think it must speak to how much they worried about Prince Harry.
Yes, I agree. I think it's very clear from this story that there's already a wedge between Prince Harry and, at the very least, the communications office of the palace.
Yeah. Now, luckily for News of the World, Harry had also recently visited a rehab centre with Charles as part of what Harry described as his sort of prince duties, his charity work. The tabloid then repurposed the photos from that day and used them to claim that Charles had taken Harry to the rehab centre to scare him straight.
Oh, as per the palace papers. In fact, the drug allegations were made 2 months after the visit. The edited timeline was an image-shaping solution concocted by palace PR executive Mark Boland to make Charles look like a caring paterfamilias of a contrite Harry.
All right, so just to summarise, Charles knew that Harry had smoked weed. Instead of actually challenging News of the World to present their evidence of Harry's alleged hard drug use, the palace instead decided to trust that News of the World had the evidence rather than trust Harry's word that he hadn't done cocaine, and they made a preemptive deal. In spare, Harry alleged that the palace fed this information to News of the World, knowing full well it would make a teenage Harry look bad, because they believed it would make Charles, in desperate need of positive press due to his ongoing relationship with Camilla, look good.
Yikes. Here's how Harry described it. The palace's spin doctor had decided that the best approach in this case would be to spin me, right under the bus. In one swoop, this would appease the editor and also bolster the sagging reputation of Parr. Amid all this unpleasantness, all this extortion and gamesmanship, the spin doctor had discovered one silver lining, one shiny consolation prize for Parr. No more the unfaithful husband, Parr would now be presented to the world as the harried single dad coping with a drug-addled child. I don't know. Yeah.
It's funny because it feels far-fetched, but then Tina Brown and Prince Harry don't agree on much, but they do both agree that this was a deeply unfair move on the palace's behalf. In the palace papers, Tina Brown described the 7-page original article and subsequent media coverage as a wretched passage for teenage Harry. I can kind of see it.
Same.
I think they did this.
I think so too. It's like a very, it feels stranger than fiction. Shout out Eilish Gilligan.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think in a roundabout way, this does add up. And I do think, again, points to how Harry would just grow to hate this institution. As a teenager, I mean, it comes with a lot of stigma to be referred to as, you know, someone with drug misuse problems. But for a teenager, like, this is a huge amount of mental anguish to put on someone unnecessarily.
I can't even be sure that the payoff's there for Prince Charles.
Well, we, like, still all hated him.
Well, it's like, what, so now he looks better because his son? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's at this point in the timeline that 17-year-old Harry was approaching the end of his schooling. Harry and Charles sat down to kind of work out what Harry was going to do with his life after graduation. It was pretty clear that Harry wasn't the type that was going to go on to university. He claimed in spare that Charles had said he wasn't the family scholar. So they eventually decided that he would embark on a career mission in the British Army.
Yeah, but first they agreed that Harry would take a gap year. It was decided that he would spend half of the gap year in Australia, working on a farm, then the second half in South Africa, joining the fight against AIDS. After Harry graduated from Eton in June 2003, things were looking up. He was officially done with school, which he had found pretty difficult, and he was looking forward to kind of starting on a blank page, on embarking on this Australian adventure.
Yeah, unfortunately though, his reputation as not the family scholar was encouraged by a nasty accusation of cheating on his final Eton exams a little over a year after his graduation. So, as per an article in The Age at the time, Prince Harry's reputation as the most academically challenged royal of his generation has been enhanced by a former teacher's claim that she secretly taped him, admitting he cheated in an important art exam. This is so fucked.
Yeah.
So this is a bit confusing, but the accusation that was made against Harry by his former art teacher was supposedly backed up by this recording of a conversation between Harry and his teacher, in which he allegedly admitted to writing about a sentence of text for a project that contributed to his final mark.
Imagine being enrolled in a school like Eton, which is supposed to be for the creme de la creme of society, but the teachers are recording what the students are saying and then exposing them to the tabloids a year after they've graduated.
Yeah. And so the thing about this story is it just feels so, like, weird. The teacher was basically saying that he admitted he only wrote about a sentence, and her bosses allegedly told her to write the rest of it herself because he couldn't fail the exam. It was taken to the exam board at Eton, and Harry was eventually proven innocent, but the story stuck.
Yeah, as per spare, the damage was done. Brokenhearted, I wanted to release a statement, hold a press conference, tell the world I did the work, I didn't cheat. The palace wouldn't let me. In this, as most things, the palace stuck fast to the family motto: never complain, never explain, especially if the complainer was an 18-year-old boy. To be fair, a spokesperson for Charles did actually speak out against this cheating claim. The spokesperson, the communications secretary, Patty Harvison, said the accusation was incredibly unfair. And specifically, Patty also condemned the recorded evidence of Harry's alleged cheating. Patty said the tape was made when Harry was stopped on his way to an exam and secretly recorded by a teacher. It contains barely audible half sentences and it appears to have been edited. It's also difficult to tell what Harry is saying and what he's referring to due to the poor quality of the recording and the disjointed nature of the tape. The fact remains Harry did not cheat. The allegations have been independently investigated and proven unfounded.
I mean, I would say this is the definition of explaining and complaining.
Pretty emphatic.
Yeah. But apparently Harry wanted to be able to speak up for himself rather than have the palace speak on his behalf. Meanwhile, he was attempting to enjoy his gap year as a jackaroo in rural Queensland. He arrived in Australia in September 2003, and his arrival was accompanied by a stern warning from the palace to the press to back off.
As per ABC at the time, a palace spokeswoman said the royals were pleased with the conduct of the media at the photo call at Sydney Zoo on Tuesday, but were worried paid photographers and cameramen might use planes, helicopters and long lenses to film Harry on the rural property where he is stationed. She said the warning, which had not been prompted by one specific incident, applied to both British and Australian media. I mean, that all adds up to tell me that the palace, at least in this instance, was protecting Harry or trying to protect Harry.
Yeah, and at first, this warning seemed to have the intended effect. Harry worked really long days on the farm herding cattle until about December 2003, when he alleged the first photographer made their way onto the property to try and steal a picture. As per Spare, I was glum. I knew what was coming. Paps were like ants. There was never just one. Sure enough, the very next day, two more crept onto the farm. Time to go. Next stop, Mish, South Africa.
Yeah, next stop, South Africa. But in between his gap year activities, Prince Harry did spend some time in London. It wasn't like he lived in South Africa full time. So he was going out with friends and enjoying his time off in London, which sounds pretty harmless until you think about what happened in Feb 2004. Because Zara, in Feb 2004, journalist Carol Sala penned an opinion piece for the Daily Express with the headline, "Spoiled and Lazy Harry is One of a Kind."
Yeah, the piece has been lost to time, but here's a small snippet of the original. Harry is a thoroughly horrible young man. His exploits have been making headlines for years. The drinking, the drugging, the yobbing, the waste of the costliest education in the land, the explicit disdain for the lower orders, the increasingly sexual public romps. We've seen it all. We've heard it all. Harry has rarely lifted a finger unless it's to feel up a cheap tart in a nightclub.
It's hard not to understand his anger and his, like, deep feeling of being let down when you read shit like that. That is so fucking brutal.
Oh, it's so yuck, particularly if you're also of the belief that the press killed your mother. This is just like the cherry on top. Mm. The piece made headlines around the world, and it was really clear that the palace communications secretary, Patty Harbison, who we mentioned before, would have to make another statement speaking out against the latest press ruse. In a rare move, Patty released a statement that seemed to take the Daily Express piece down point by point.
Yeah, that statement, which was sent directly to the Daily Express, read in part, "The comments make it entirely clear that Miss Sala has little or no understanding of Harry as a person and how he has spent his current gap year. He has insisted his gap year be spent working, rather than on making VIP-style visits where he simply hears of local people's problems." Regardless of what the press had to say about him, Harry had the second half of his gap year to get on with. So in early 2004, he set off for Lesotho, a small country in southern Africa. The plan was to spend 3 months there.
Yeah, he told reporters at the time that he hoped his work there would bring more awareness to the country, where it was estimated at the time that up to one third of the residents were HIV positive. Around this time as well, he also started dating 19-year-old Chelsea Davey, a Zimbabwean who went to school in the UK. As per Spare, "I loved Chelsea's ease, that she wasn't complicated. She didn't care what anyone thought. She wore miniskirts and high-heeled boots, danced however she wanted, drank tequila like me, and all of this made me really happy."
Mm. Another thing that was looking up for Harry was that around this time he passed the entrance exam to join the British Army. All was well, or as well as you could expect with the relentless paparazzi hounding him and hounding Chelsea when they were both together and apart. But Zara, Prince Harry was about to make what I would call the stupidest decision of his life.
Yeah, let's fast forward slightly to Jan 2005 when he was 20 years old. He was scheduled to begin his military training in May 2005, so he was spending time in London with Charles and Camilla until then. Harry, William, and William's new girlfriend, a woman by the name of Kate Middleton, were invited to a birthday party for one of Will's friends. The theme of the party was natives and colonials, which is, you know, already deeply offensive, but let's keep going. According to Harry, he went to a local costume shop to find a costume for this party. "I went up and down the rows, sifting through the racks, seeing nothing I liked. With time running out, I narrowed my options to two, a British pilot's uniform and a sand-coloured Nazi uniform with a swastika armband and a flat cap. I phoned Willie and Kate, asked what they thought. Nazi uniform, they said."
Just a quick aside. The fact that in Spare, Harry claimed it was William and Kate who encouraged him to wear the Nazi uniform, like, that was a really intense, out of left field, I would say, revelation. Nobody ever had any idea that maybe William and Kate also approved of this costume. And I I still feel a range of things about it. I mean, this whole story is obviously deeply offensive and uncomfortable. I still don't know if I like him bringing in William and Kate, even if it's true in this, because to me it does feel like trying to shirk some blame when I'm not
completely.
That's not what we really need 20 years later.
I was going to say it's 20 years later.
Like just cop it?
Yeah.
You were the one who bought it and wore it?
Yeah. According to Harry, no one looked twice at his uniform at the party, but people did take photos. All those photos were quickly sold to the press for £5,000. To say this made global news would be an absolute understatement.
Oh
this
God.
Was a monumental news story, and Harry faced severe backlash.
I also remember being really young. I would have been 11 at
this
time.
Same.
And I remember hearing about this, seeing this. I actually didn't at the time understand what a Nazi uniform was, but I remember seeing so many television reports in particular of these photos.
Yeah, here's how Harry described the press following the photos going public. What followed was a firestorm, which I thought at times would engulf me, and I felt I deserved to be engulfed. There were moments over the course of the next several weeks and months when I thought I might die of shame. The typical response to photos was, what could he have been thinking? The simplest answer was, I wasn't.
So that was where Harry's head was at, but what was the press saying? We're going to have a look. We're going to start with the New York Post. They wrote on their front page, Britain's Prince Harry stunned more than 250 guests at a costume party by showing up dressed head to toe as a Nazi soldier with a red armband emblazoned with a big swastika.
This article went on to discuss which members of the royal family allegedly had ties with the Nazi party. Journalist Elaine C. Smith called for the abolishment of the monarchy in light of the photos in the Sunday Mail. She wrote, I've been to many fancy dress do's in my life and have not come across a Nazi yet. The debate is whether we should have a monarchy at all. Maybe what Prince Harry should do is take a trip to Auschwitz and see just what the swastika truly stood for.
Many outlets pointed out that this was far from the first controversy for young Prince Harry. As per the Sydney Morning Herald, the 20-year-old Harry is already the veteran of several controversies. Many government officials throughout the Commonwealth called upon Harry to withdraw from the Royal Military Academy. Here's what the New York Post reported. Former Armed Forces Minister Doug Henderson said the incident showed the prince was not suitable for Sandhurst and his application should be withdrawn immediately.
Yeah, of course, Jewish leaders and groups around the world were horrified by the costume, as per The Guardian. A spokesman for the Board of Deputies of British Jews said, it is not a joke to dress up as a Nazi, especially as we come up to the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. It is important that everybody remembers the evil that the Nazis were responsible for. This was one of those incidents where there was no justification, no way to play devil's advocate. Harry had so clearly fucked up and absolutely every single person ever was furious.
Mm-hmm.
Almost immediately, Harry released a short statement apologizing for wearing the costume. It read, I am very sorry if I caused any offense or embarrassment to anyone. It was a poor choice of costume and I apologize.
When Harry released Spare last year, we learned about William and Charles's reactions to the furore. According to Harry, William was sympathetic, but there wasn't much to say. As for Charles, Harry wrote that he was serene, which made him suspicious that his father may have been planning to use this incident as an opportunity to bolster his own PR off the back of Harry's mistake. But as it turned out, he was wrong. Here's the quote from the book. He spoke to me with such tenderness, such genuine compassion that I was disarmed and grateful. He didn't gloss over the facts. Darling boy, how could you be so foolish? My cheeks burned. I know. But he quickly went on to say that it was the foolishness of youth, that he remembered being publicly vilified for his sins, and it wasn't fair because youth is the time when you're, by definition, unfinished.
As part of his reparations, Harry met with the chief rabbi of Britain. Harry wrote of this meeting in Spare, emphasizing how gracious the chief rabbi was during this meeting, writing, I arrived at the rabbi's house feeling shame. I now felt something else, a bottomless self-loathing. But that wasn't the rabbi's aim. That certainly wasn't how he wanted me to leave him. He urged me not to be devastated by my mistake, but instead be motivated. He spoke to me with the quality one often encounters in truly wise people, forgiveness.
Although the public's calls for Harry to be barred from joining the British Army were extremely loud, the powers that be at Sandhurst Military Academy held fast. According to Harry, their reasoning was that the incident had not taken place when he was actually enrolled or studying at Sandhurst yet. If it had, they probably would have disciplined him, he says. But because he wasn't there yet, they decided to allow him to begin his studies in May 2005, just as they had planned.
Yeah, it would take a long time for Harry to shake the bad press surrounding the Nazi costume incident. Even when Charles and Camilla finally got married in April 2005, the press was still bringing it up. Take this from the New York Times wrap-up of Charles and Camilla's low-key wedding. Prince Harry, who is said, though, by the salacious British tabloids to resent his new stepmother and who will not soon be allowed to forget his Nazi outfit gaffe, chatted and joked with his brother.
For what it's worth, it does seem as though Harry did really resent Camilla, that the tabloids had got it right. I mean, we now have his own words in spare, and they all seem to indicate that, yes, something was going on with him when it came to Camilla. He wrote, "I had complex feelings about gaining a step-parent who, I believed, had recently sacrificed me on her personal PR altar. But I saw Pa's smile, and it was hard to argue with that, and harder still to deny the cause, Camilla."
Yeah, that's obviously referring to, I think, still the marijuana story, I think.
Yeah, I think Harry, he gained a lot of evidence that people were against him or maybe using him for their own PR wins when he was a child, and then it stuck. Like, I don't think he could ever override that belief.
Completely. That, though, Mish, is where we're going to leave 20-year-old Harry for now, just about to begin his military training and with his tail between his legs after the costume controversy. We've got so much more to cover because we're going to introduce Meghan Markle.
We haven't even
next
met
week.
Meghan.
If you guys want to listen to that episode right now, you know you can. All you have to do is subscribe to Shay Moore on Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. That will be there for you right now. If you're not subscribed and you want to wait another week, that's fine. We'll be back in your ears on Monday.
Absolutely. I'm so glad we're doing the series. Recording this, although it covers some obviously very dark, very complicated, offensive material, that was one of my favourite recordings we've done.
Well, props to pop culture journalist Eilish Gilligan for her work on this. Props to Annabelle Lee, our audio editor as well. And props to you. And props to
props
me.
Props to you.
Props to me as well. Thanks so much, guys. We will be back in your ears, as always, on Thursday.
Bye.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello guys, Mish here. I am the co-founder of Shameless Media. Thank you so much for giving us your ears and your mind and your time. We're so grateful. If you enjoy the stuff that we produce, may I recommend our brand new podcast, Stylish, if you want to say it quickly, style-ish, if you want to take the long way through. It is our podcast for all things fashion, brand, business, and beauty. If that is in your wheelhouse, if you care about style content, you will love this show. It is, of course, more than just a show as well. It is a newsletter. It is an Instagram feed. It is a TikTok account. There is so much good stuff going out on Stylish every single day, starting now. So in your favorite app, search for style-ish. Give it a listen, give it a follow. We are an independent media company and we would be so, so grateful for all your support. That's all for me, guys. Check out Stylish and have a good one.